What's up, guys? Hope you guys have been enjoying the Elk Hunting Podcast. I'm recording this intro back from the second trip, so I'm done elk hunting for the season, which is a little unfortunate, but I'm really happy that I got the chance to go, and I had a lot of fun doing it. But this podcast was recorded on our first night of our second trip, so we got out there and got to the top of a mountain that we felt like we were going to hear a lot from for that night while we were camping, and first thing in the morning, and it was my friend Ben Robinson. Ben's from Ohio, and then my buddy Colin Miller, who is from Indiana originally, but now lives in Colorado. He's been a resident in Colorado for about a year. So the three of us were hunting our way back into this piece of public, and this was just our first night. We decided to record one right there on the mountain, and we pretty much just talked about our expectations, some of the prep that it took. I had been elk hunting for 10 days at this point, but these guys, fresh out there. Like, this is their first evening, first night on the mountain, first night camping, and they were very excited, and obviously they have questions, and we discuss a lot of things that we felt like were common questions for us as Eastern elk hunters, and just talked a little bit of some of the prep that it took to get there. So really my plan for the podcast throughout the season is to try to get as many of these podcasts as possible while we're out in the field or back at camp, any way that we can really just be discussing our current thought process and our current success, failures, whatever it may be, just talking more in the moment, just deer camp type stuff. That's kind of the goal with these. So if you guys have any feedback, anything you'd like to hear more of, shoot me a message, shoot the hunting public a message, whatever works best for you. And we'll try to keep getting the content that you guys want to hear. But before we get started, just real quick, want to remind you guys of these promo codes. If you need any new trail cameras, we can save you 10% off of Exodus trail cameras if you use the code THP10. If you need any new bow accessories, we can save you 20% off Trophy Ridge accessories if you use the code THP20. If you need any new calls, we can save you 10% off Woodhaven calls if you use the code THP2018. And finally, if you want to save 20% off of the Onyx Hunt app, you can use the code THP. Hope you guys enjoy this podcast. We had a fun time recording it on the mountain. All right, guys, welcome to a podcast from the mountain. We've got myself, Zach, and my buddy Ben, and my buddy Colin. So for those of you that don't know, buddy Ben, buddy Ben is from Ohio. He's been in some of the Ohio videos, whether we're turkey hunting or deer hunting. You might have seen him there. Colin is my new friend from Colorado, and we decided to link up forces and go elk hunting. So here we are at 10,400 feet. We're recording by laying on our, like, we all got our little seats here, and we're all huddled around the recorder, and we're recording straight from a mic that's plugged right into the recorder, so you're going to hear some weird stuff. You may be hearing that cricket back there making some noise, but, you know, we're just doing it because I figure it'd probably be pretty cool to kind of get our perspective up here on our first night out. So, first off, how you guys?
First off, what?
How are you guys?
I'm well, man.
I'm good.
Well fed.
I'm doing good.
What'd you guys have for dinner?
I had a little lasagna with some courtesy Tabasco sauce, thanks to Zach.
I had some undercooked chicken Alfredo, but it hit the spot.
A little watered down, sounded like.
It was like a soup more than a lasagna or a pasta.
That's what you're going to deal with at times out here up on the mountain. But so, like I said, we're at 10,400 feet, and just to kind of give you guys a quick background, Ben drove from Ohio. What day did you start?
Thursday night, I guess.
Okay. And he drove here, got here
last night
late. Got up this morning, kind of repacked everything, made sure everything was good to go.
Almost forgot my bow.
Yeah. Ben doesn't have a tag. I'm the only one with the tag right now, but we're willing to like go into town and get more tags if we have some success, and we have a lot of confidence. But basically what we did this morning, or I keep saying this morning, this afternoon, we got here about 3:45, got to a trailhead that is part of the area that I was hunting with Wes, Cody, and Ted, and Zach, but it's not the same trailhead. Came in at a different angle, walked a little bit more elevation to get up in here, but we basically just beelined it straight to this spot, and we passed a lot of hunter sign. There's a lot of four-wheelers that we passed, but that's essentially how we got to this point. We wanted to get here because we feel like this is going to put us in an advantage in the morning. We're going to be able to hear a lot from the spot tonight and first thing in the morning as we're packing up, hopefully being able to make moves. Weather's supposed to be good tomorrow, but before we get into too much about what we're doing right here, right now, let's talk about kind of some of the plans and prepping that you guys have done being on your first elk hunt. So just give a quick background, I guess, or like a little bit about like some of your thought processes. It can be really anything, I think, because I think you'll answer some questions that some people have. And again, Ben's from Ohio. Actually, Colin's from Indiana, not far from where I'm from in Ohio, but lives in Colorado now. So, and you've been a Colorado resident for a year?
A little over a year.
Okay. So that's the perspective. That's the background of these guys. Just kind of talk a little bit about your prep and your expectations, or like, yeah, just about your expectations.
Yeah. I mean, as far as prep goes, we all kind of had some camping stuff, I assume. But there's definitely some things like a giant pack that you don't have on hand as a whitetail hunter.
Right.
So we put this all together in a month or two.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we got it all. I mean, yeah. It all worked out. I mean, as far as expectations go, you always look at the map and you think, yeah, you know, we'll get there in no time. But it's obviously way bigger country when you get out here.
Right.
And then it takes 3 extra hours.
Yeah.
To get up to the top of the mountain that Zach wants to get to the top of.
Yeah. But I am glad we're up here, because I did not realize that like you could see this far from this knob. Yeah, I mean,
yeah, it's pretty incredible. Living out here, I've spent a lot more time kind of preparing than these guys. Still probably not that much more prepared than they are. But I've been scouting all summer. I have a couple second rifle tags that I'm going to go chase here end of October. So, you know, I've had some failures on scouting and just really got burnt on going in and realizing this is not where I want to be picking up, you know, drive 3 hours and go somewhere else. So I learned a lot just by putting feet on the ground and trying to get that figured out. But
when you say that you went scouting, because we did some scouting together too, and we found stuff that we really liked, and I ended up going in there with those guys, you know, on the trip before this, like what made you feel like some of those scouting attempts were like not, like what made you say, nah, this isn't what I like?
So the very first scouting trip of the year, my brother flew out and we spent three or four days, but we kind of diverted the original plan based off the weather. You know, there was still snow up there. It was raining pretty bad. So we kind of flew by the seat of our pants and went 2 hours south of where we were planning on going. And it was just extremely rough terrain that was barely even like passable. You know, we spent a day in there and you just couldn't cover any ground.
So basically your perspective on, since you had not a ton of like past experience in this terrain, when you got there you're like, whoa, way even steeper, more rough than you even anticipated, and there's just not game there.
Like, I learned more about reading a map in 2 hours than I had my entire life.
That's pretty cool. I think that's really cool.
It was awesome, you know, and we got into some elk, found some decent spots that, you know, I can keep in my back pocket if I ever want to go hunt them. So it was a huge learning experience, and it, you know, made my next scouting trip that much more successful, you know, where I was actually able to get in and find, you know, the mule deer I was looking for in some elk country and, you know, find a herd of elk and learned a whole lot. You learn so much from your failures.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, you can't be mad at them.
Mm-hmm. So, Ben, in comparison from what you've seen so far going into this unit, what have you seen in comparison to other, like, western areas that you've been in? Because also one fun fact about Ben is he does firefighting in the summer. So he'll go from Ohio out west, fight wildfires, and I think that's pretty cool. So, like, in comparison to stuff that you and I have scouted out here in Colorado, mm-hmm. and just anything you've seen out west, how does this particular area that we're at right now compare as far as sign and just like terrain and habitat?
Yeah, I guess I've been in areas where we've seen a lot of sign, but you know, we're in like private land units sometimes, so you get in there and it's just tore up, but you'd never actually be able to hunt that in a long
when time. You're on a wildfire fight.
Yeah, well, I mean, but that unit itself would take forever to draw or something like that. Yeah. So I haven't really been in any like wilderness units except one in Colorado, I guess, and we didn't see much sign there, but I mean, terrain-wise, it's kind of what I expected. Mm-hmm. The one thing that I did not, you know, I guess it's kind of unique to Colorado is the beetle kill.
Yeah,
I mean, just like mountainsides of dead timber.
Oh yeah,
and we haven't even actually got into it yet. Yeah. So it's gonna be a lot of high stepping tomorrow.
that beetle kill is pretty crazy, and some of the burn units you get into are pretty wicked as well. Yeah. I scouted the edge of a burn that burnt 2 years ago, and you know, if it gets wet, it's like a slip and slide. You got to be really careful in there. So not only are you stepping over all these down trees, you're slipping and sliding everywhere, and you know, it's something to be really conscious about, especially if you're going into a new burned unit that, you know, if it gets wet, you got to really take your time. You can't cover a lot of ground very fast.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
Yeah. So trying to think.
But I guess I've also been in a lot of like open country too.
Yeah.
Like Wyoming, I remember we were up in the Bighorns, and that's kind of, I mean, where at least where we were, like up on top of the Bighorns, it flattens out. It's kind of like what we drove in here with those mm-hmm. parks, I guess.
Yeah.
And tons of people hunting it. I mean, four-wheeler access, everything seems super accessible. That was my expectation of western hunting. I was like, well, everybody just sets up a camp at the base of this hill and. But here we're in true wilderness. I mean, we're right on the edge of true wilderness now.
Yeah. Well, and that was kind of the strategy, is just try to get deep in here, try to get away from that easy foot pressure from the guy. Because, you know, at the trailhead we parked at, there wasn't a ton of vehicles, but there was camps there. And, like, our goal was just to get away from them and their four-wheelers, like, get past the areas where they can take those four-wheelers. And that's kind of what we did. And feel good about that as far as, you know, obviously I think made that clear. Feel good and confident for tomorrow. But I guess what type of questions do you guys have, or like what are some things that just maybe you wonder about as, you know, or you wondered about like even in the last week leading up to this while like I was out?
Yeah.
Because I had a lot of questions and stuff, and like I'm sure there's some things that I learned from those guys you know, that I was hunting with last week's. Like,
I think my biggest anticipation at this point is tomorrow morning. I mean, to me, I'm expecting, like, you know, you wake up and turkey hunt and there's just birds sounding off on different points. Okay. And like, to me, like, we're gonna wake up here and there's gonna be five bulls around us. It may not be the case,
and trying to figure out which direction we're going, and
right,
you don't want to, you know, get over ambitious about it, but you can dream.
Yeah.
I think
so. I guess, yeah, I'm interested to see how many you actually hear off the bat, and then like kind of what, you know, what's their general direction, like what's he bugling for? Is mm-hmm. he rounding cows up and moving to bedding, or?
Yeah, and we were pretty hard charged to get back here today. I think mm-hmm. we did 5.5 miles, you know, just this afternoon, and that was, I think my phone said we did like 130 floors in a couple hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious, you know,
how that compares to other days, you mean?
What's going to look like tomorrow?
Well,
because Zach's kind of a monster, and I don't think he gets tired, so it's a it's going to be interesting.
That's good. That's a good leader to have. I know I'd be stopping a heck of a lot more.
Yeah, you don't want me in front.
I think to kind of put a little bit of perspective on both those things, like, I think I have at least a decent answer for both of them. Highly doubt there'll be five bulls sound enough, but, like, from where we're at, being where we are, this one thing I really, like, picked up on from hunting with Cody and Wes and Zach is, like, they wanted to camp in areas where they could hear a lot. And I feel like I got some feedback from other people, and they were like, oh, you guys are going to camp. The problem with camping out there is, like, you know, you might just be bumping the elk that you're hunting around. It's like, dude, I really don't feel that way, because there's so much ground that we can hear that even if one comes up through here and winds us, it's like he's just going to go 400 yards away and move off. And if he's 400 yards away and bugling in the morning, we're going to hear him. So with that being said, though, like, I think there's a really good chance we're going to hear at least one bull bugling, maybe two, you know. So, like, the best bugling frenzies that we got into on this last trip, I think there was four on the best. Second best, there was two, maybe three. So, I mean, and it could be totally different. And then again, I'm also telling you that from, like, you know, just experience from, you know, still limited experience. But the other thing that, Colin, you kind of touched on was, like, you know, we covered a bunch of ground today. How does that compare to the rest of the days? I think it varies, you know. One of the coolest parts to me, and you guys are going to love it too, just because of, like, how much we've talked about it, about whitetail. It's like, it's so similar to, like, you're in them and then you're not. It's like today, to get up here, we went through a spot where, that one spot where we bumped what you thought was funny, timeout.
I could have swore that was a cow elk.
We bumped, like, early in the walk, not early in the walk, but we were starting to just get away from, like, where you could tell there had been people hunting, and we bumped mule deer, doe, and a fawn. And until just, like, 15 minutes before we started this, Colin thought that it was a cow elk, and Ben and I saw that it was deer, but we just thought that was really hilarious, because the whole, like, all afternoon, he's just been thinking that we saw an elk today.
To be fair, I was
you were behind.
I was taking pictures about 30 or 40 yards behind you guys. Yeah. That's the only excuse I have for that.
Nah, man, it's all good. It's hilarious. Makes for a funny memory of it. But, you know, right in that area where we bumped those deer, you know, we kind of got past those deer, and we actually found some pretty fresh sign. Mm-hmm. There were some beds. Nothing crazy. Not like what we'll see when we get into some of the better areas, I think. But, you know, then we hit a portion climbing up here to where we're... to where we're puked up in my mouth a little bit, a little of that mountain house. Jeez. So,
It's rehydrating inside. Yeah.
It's still cooking in there.
It's the mountain house mudslides, buddy.
Jeez. So... we started climbing to get up here, and we just kind of hit a window where it was like, there's old trails and stuff and lots of old rubs, if you notice, like from last year, 2 years ago. And those trails are like worn in, but it's just like, this is not hot. Like a few, like, couple day old tracks. And don't get me wrong, like, we were still going through those areas, bugling, playing it like there was an elk behind every tree, but there's just definitely a lower density there. And it's just like what we're looking for in deer. It's like, yeah, okay, there's a buck here, there's a buck there. You know, that's all fine and dandy, but then when you hit that spot that's just, like, on fire, where you're seeing car hood-sized scrapes, you're seeing bunch of scrapes, bunch of rubs, bunch of trails, big buck tracks, does, you know, has all those factors that just has that hot sign where you can tell all the deer are in there for whatever reason. I feel like that's so similar in this elk hunting, at least in the experience that I have, so... that's one part that I'm excited for you guys to see how that, like, plays into just the similarities between the types of hunting. Mm-hmm.
I got a question for you, man.
Sure.
So, you know, we know the deer rut, but this elk rut, I'm still kind of unsure, like, Do you know how, like, how long cows are in heat, or what's the kind of like what happens really? Like, are they still in a herd when one's in heat?
So,
or does she kind of break off and do her own thing, and then a bunch of bulls end up in that area?
So one night when we were,
because we're getting theoretically close to that time, right?
It's, yeah, I think right now is like technically peak.
Dang.
Sweet. Just like middle of November. So right in that middle of the month time frame, you're starting to get to the peak. But I think one thing that was interesting that Cody told me is he thinks that a lot of times I guess this is just kind of the conversation we had, because I asked a similar question as far as how does it work? You know, what are these challenge calls that we're doing? How does that work? Mm-hmm. And he said a lot of times he thinks you're dealing with, you know, just naturally, you know, no hunting involved. Like, there's a group of cows that has like a bull, and those bigger, like more mature bulls will just like go cruising through, bugling, challenge that bull. When one of those cows is in heat, challenge that bull, run him out, breed that cow, and then move on.
Really?
And I was like, man, like, that's not what I expected.
No.
And maybe in, I don't know. I just found that really interesting, because I feel like it's kind of why too, you can bump into some of these bigger bulls while you're out here. I mean, every bull that we saw, I told you this, and I may have mentioned it to you, Colin, like, every bull we saw in here was like dang nice. Like, it wasn't like, yeah, I don't know. I just had this expectation we'd see like, you know, a bunch of 3 points and bulls that were like on the fence of being legal. Like, none of the bulls that we saw or called in were like even on the fence. It was like, whew, like, that's a gooder, you know. So it's like, I think that's kind of wise. You're kind of bumping into those bigger bulls that are cruising. And as it starts to peak, you know, one of the things that Cody said that we could be dealing with, you know, now that we're here a little bit later, is potential to be calling to bulls that are with cows, which would be interesting. And we were seeing that at the tail end of the last hunt. Mm. But like, just, and if you notice, like, even coming through some of these parks or whatever, and by park we basically mean a meadow with like a stream going through it, a lot of times there's wallows and it's just kind of a congregation area for elk. It honestly seems like a crop field in the Midwest for whitetail. Mm-hmm. Like, just a congregation area. If you notice, there's like those night beds. I'm assuming they're mostly night beds.
Mm-hmm.
But those beds where it'll be like kind of a wad of elk beds, a lot of times that's the bowl with the cows.
Mm-hmm.
And like, one example, we had a hunt actually just right over here close to where we're camping, where we chased some bulls at last light, and there was a group of bulls around like a cow or two, and we assumed that cow had to have been hot, because it was like, that was the day we heard 4 bulls bugling.
Yeah.
And it was just crazy, and they were like in a wallow, and like there was satellite bulls like real close but being vocal, and that was pretty cool. So I think we're gonna probably have higher odds of being in the time frame where you're like in that more, just to put it into a whitetail term, like a lockdown phase.
Yeah.
Where you got more bulls with cows. But I don't know what that'll do for the hunting necessarily. I think it could make it go either way.
Where, I mean, like, in theory, there could be a herd with a couple cows. I mean, I don't know how big these cow herds are, but if they're big enough, could there be a couple cows that are in heat?
Potentially.
Yeah.
I would say. I don't know. I also don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you hear the term like a satellite bull quite a bit, of just, you know, that bull that hangs around but is not really welcome in the herd.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's my understanding of it. So, you know, maybe there comes a point where we're going to be chasing satellite bulls.
Well, and I think the cool thing is if they're vocal, like, you can be really dang close to them. Like, you can, like, the one in that night, like, he was 55 yards in the trees, raking trees, standing just off of the group and the bull that was with the cow, because Ted was filming him. That bull was screaming a lot and bugling and laying and rolling in the wallow and stuff like that. But like, they were about 100 yards from us, and he was with the cow. So it's like, yeah, I think there's, I guess my expectation is too, is like, or hope at least, and this is a totally naive statement, so like with that, you know, just take that for what it is for those listening. Like, I could be completely wrong here, but I feel like since that peak rut time maybe hitting, it's like if we could find a lone bull bedded down and he hears our calls, it could be a really quick snap. It's already a really quick snap when it happens, man. It's so weird. And this is something that it's just so hard to explain. It's so crazy. It just gets monotonous, right? Almost started to feel monotonous. We didn't even bugle a ton today. Like, it's just wait, you know? It's like, you bugle, and you bugle, and you bugle, and you bugle. And then you get to a spot, and you're like, this is the one. And you bugle and nothing, and then you just have that one, and it doesn't really make a lot of sense, and boom, he bugles back, and it's like game on. I feel like because the rut is amped up, we got a little bit colder temperatures, the weather's supposed to be pretty, like, it feels pretty dang good, like clear, like I can see all the stars, just a light, very light breeze right now. It's like, it feels like rut. It feels like whitetail rut weather. So it's like, my hope is that we just bump into more elk that are willing to play the game a little bit. But who knows? May not be the case at all. And one thing that Cody said that was interesting is like, he feels like early, you can just catch bulls cruising sometimes more. Mm-hmm. But like, the one consensus that we kind of had too is like, and we had talked about this in some podcasts, or maybe we didn't talk about it in podcasts, but kind of something that we had talked about that I think is kind of cool or interesting, or like, I'll just kind of recap it real quick. It's like, I feel like in whitetail hunting, everybody wants to put a date on the rut. They want to be like, oh, it's on right now, like, you know, and if you've looked at science and in the science of it at all, like, It's the peak of it is literally November 14th, like, period. That's just when it is, because like of when fawns are born, highest, you know, densities of fawns are born. So like, that has to be the same with elk. But you know, with these hotter temperatures that we had at the beginning of the season, you know, leaves really aren't changing in the time, like they should be starting to change now. But like, the aspen trees are still perfectly green. There's a few trees that are maybe a little yellow, but like, while there still has been some cows in heat or in that early part of the season, that first chunk of the bow season, it's like, because the weather wasn't primed up, the bulls may not be up and cruising as much. You know what I mean?
Was this not like the weather you guys had last cold?
This is cold.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, this is really cold. Like, nice. We were 55 degrees. Like, I feel like it's... Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, geez. Okay.
Yeah, it was so 75 to 80 to 50.
So this is the first cold snap, this, then? Because it snowed really up here a couple days ago, I think, just a light dust.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, the last couple days is the first real cold snap that they've seen up this, you know, in the mountains this year. And like I said, it's only 32 degrees, but it's still a little chilly, and that's, you know, 32 down from 55. That'll kick something into gear.
Yeah, I feel like we're definitely going to hear action just because of it. Like, I'm sitting here, like, you might hear it in my voice, like, I'm shivering. Like,
I think
cold.
We're all just a hair cold.
Yeah. So it's like, not painful, but like, whew, like a little bit of a chill. I mean, I think that's going to be really good for hunting in the morning, and I think, again, don't get me wrong, when a cow's hot or a doe's hot, it doesn't matter if it's 90 degrees or if it's 1 degree, stuff's moving, period.
Yeah.
But there's still a peak in the rut, but I think when you can get that weather, some good weather, and it just gets them feeling it, right? I mean, it's just like when a good song comes out at the dance floor, you know, and you start grooving. You're feeling it, you know? You're feeling...
Oh, I'm usually feeling it at that point.
You know what I mean? It's kind of... I mean, it's just like...
1,000% of the time, man.
But I just feel like that's kind of the deal that you're getting with. You're getting those bulls up ready to be on the dance floor and with that cold snap, and that's kind of what we had talked about, and I feel like maybe we're going to get lucky with that. Do you guys have other, like, prep questions or things that, like, trying to think back on, like, some things that maybe, like, maybe specifically Ben, like, things that when we first started planning this, we're like, oh, man, we need to this and that, or some things that were, like, must-haves. You got anything? Or things that you're, like, wish you wouldn't bring already?
Not yet. Give it 6 days, and I might find some things I should have not brought. I'm trying to think what we even have.
I would say don't try and fit 3 days worth of stuff in a one-day pack.
Colin's rolling a one-day pack, but he's not going to be here for the whole time. He's got to go back to work, so he's just kind of muscling it out. It seems to be looking... It looks fine, man. Yeah. It looks like it, you packed it all in there. It's just close.
It's tight. I'm running a really light camp. Just a rain fly with a sleeping bag and a pad.
Mm-hmm.
And then I left some clothes out. Like, right now, I really wish I would have brought that puffy vest.
Mm-hmm.
But it just, you know, it was too tight. And, you know, I have a Kuyu pack that I, you know, bought used, and I'm a big bargain guy, so I couldn't find a bigger bag to throw on it. So we're just running with the day pack.
I think something that we'll go through, and we'll do a video for sure. We were just talking about this. We'll do like a what we brought, like, down to the nitty-gritty, like, down to the toothbrush and what type of toothpaste, you know, if you guys are interested in that. But one thing that a couple things that I took away from Cody and Wes was Leuco tape. What does that sound? And you got me all worried now. You're looking
Ben's
back
kicking
in the
his
dark.
Feet.
Oh, we're laying here in the dark, and Colin's looking back behind him. It's like, well, we got bears coming in here. We're going to have to fight them off. No, okay, so Leuco tape, which is like, if you haven't heard of that, is kick butt for blisters, man. Like, you just put that on if you're starting to, like, I was starting to feel, I had wet boots because we got in that storm. Wet boots for a lot of days. And I was starting to feel a blister as we were going uphill. Just starting to, like, get hot, you know. Mm-hmm. Put that stuff on there, stayed on the rest of the trip. Boom. Game changer. No blister.
That's the time to be putting stuff on, because if you wait too long,
yeah, then you're hurting. It's too late.
Yeah, you don't want to have to pop them.
Yeah.
No.
So that, I ended up buying the, we just got it set up last night, the InReach. That's a Garmin InReach is what I got. It's like a little mini thing. It's like one of these deals where you don't need it, but just having the peace of mind that if something happens to us out here, we can always pull, like in the most extreme way, you know, an really bad injury or wound or something, we can SOS out of here.
The thing with the InReach, because I bought one as well, you don't need it until you need it.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
So it's, you know, you might think, oh, I can get by without it, but you know, a lot of this deadfall and stuff, if you, you know, trip over something and break your leg, or
you might not be able to get out.
You get in a bad situation, and, you know, you might have to use that SOS button.
Yeah.
And it's...
Especially if you're by yourself. I think it's like...
Oh, yeah.
I think it's, you know, by yourself, or if you're going to be, like, splitting up day hunting or whatever, no service. I mean, it's just one of these things that, like, yeah.
I'll be straight up, though. I don't really want to have to carry you out of here.
Right.
Exactly. That's what they make helicopters for.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like that's something that was pretty important that I got. I'm trying to think of something else that I brought. Oh, a sleeping pad. So we've all got inflatable sleeping pads. Mm-hmm. Ted got a hole in his, and luckily, like, Cody had, you know, repair for it.
Mm.
Dude, Ted is one tough SOB, because I would have never in a million years slept without a pad. He slept for like 2 nights with a
he just,
pad.
Did he just didn't not tell anybody?
No.
Ted.
He's like, he's also 19, so like he's probably a little more limber in the back area than we are. But with that being said, I mean, having some sort of, you know, repair system for a pad. Any type of, like, little repair stuff, like tape. We have electric tape. You said you have some duct tape.
Duct tape.
I have some duct tape as well.
Zip ties is something that we only have two of, but we wish we had more of. So that's definitely going on the list.
I've been using hair ties for a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Nice.
I use hair ties often as well. I mean, even if you don't have long hair, like, they are pretty handy.
Backup headlamp.
Backup headlamp, yeah. Yeah. Trekking poles is something that I have had, but I do think I've not used trekking poles. So every day I put the dang things in my pack and I've not used them. But I know if we shoot a bull, when we shoot a bull, we pack that puppy out down those deadfalls. Like, it's going to be real handy to have those things, because just feel like keeping your balance with that much weight on your back is going to be rough. But
one thing on the note of trekking poles for rifle hunters too is I've realized that you can strap them together and use them as a shooting stick.
Yep.
So that's something to keep in mind for the rifle guys, that you can get away from, you know, you don't have to carry the bipod or shooting stick, and you can just use the trekking poles multi-purpose.
Yep.
And I think a big thing when you're living out of a backpack is as many things that have more than one use.
Yep.
Are, it's a game changer.
Yeah. I think I've seen, none of us have them, but some of those guys have like a shelter system with trekking poles.
Yep.
So like that's your pole and then you have just like a shelter.
Yeah, that's what Wes and Zach were riding off.
Did they like them?
Well, I guess Cody was too, yeah. Yeah, I think there's pros and cons to everything, right?
Yeah. I'm sure it's lightweight.
It's lightweight, but the poles fell. A couple times, you know, like, Wes dropped it, like, had a pole fall. We'll have to ask him, because we're hopefully going to meet up with Wes and Troy. They're out here as well on the same range, so.
We can see the mountain they're on, I guess.
Yeah, and we're like, trying to communicate through these in-reach things, so hopefully we can link up and
meet out together.
Yeah, ideally, but, another thing that like is it's so silly, but like Cody had it and I was like, dude, I'm probably more jealous of that than anything. He had my elbows are on it right now. He had part of like a foam sleeping pad that he just had as a seat, because every day we'd sit down to eat or get water or whatever, I'd end up with a wet butt. It wasn't the end of the world, but it's, like, not the most comfortable thing. It's like, dude, just sit down on a soft pad, especially, too, when this is all rocky. I mean, hey, yeah, we're in the Rockies, son. You know, it's gonna be rocky, uncomfortable on your butt. It's like, get a little pad, have a seat. Colin's got a little blow-up one. That one's pretty sick. But
and you know what? Everybody, I've got a buddy that's going to Montana this year, and he was curious, like, what my go-to things were, and I think my number one recommendation, if you're going to carry something, is some type of glassing pad.
Yeah.
Or just being able to sit down and...
And just be comfortable and not get soaked.
Be able to relax for even 5 minutes, you know, makes a world of a difference. It just rejuvenates you.
For sure. Backup socks. I only brought two pairs of socks for 10 days. And, buddy, I'll tell you what, that was rough. Those things stink. Bad. I literally washed them like 5 times and like did a whole bunch of, like, my aunt helped me like just do a bunch of crazy stuff to like try to get the smell. Like, they sucked, dude. They were so bad. So make sure you bring like socks, man. You know, they're kind of bulky, they kind of take up some room, but man, athlete's foot sucks. And like, if you're like me, like, maybe I'm wrong, maybe others think differently, but I don't think I get like the upper part of my body gets BO real bad. But, dude, the feet is just rough. So if you have that problem, make sure you bring in enough socks, because the other thing is, too, just simply if you start getting wet, some days just starting with a dry pair of socks versus putting on a wet pair of socks can really help that, like, wear and tear of your feet. You know, if you're out here wearing boots all day, walking up and down, you're going to get blisters if you got wet feet. So any way to promote drier feet, I think, is super important.
Yeah, we're gonna see how I fare on that one. I forgot my socks today, so I had to buy. I bought a pair, and so I'm rolling one pair for 3.5 days.
You'll be all right, I think. For that, I'd say you'll probably be good. As long as we don't get too much rain, which we're not supposed to while you're here, so we should be good.
I'm going to knock on wood for that one.
So, I guess final thoughts as far as like your first day, what you're thinking about tomorrow, and any maybe final, just any final thoughts, questions, comments, concerns.
I'm curious, you know, what time are we going to wake up to get ready for this?
Well, Ben and I were talking, it's like, when we got this good weather, man, I think every day that we got this good weather, let's just get up early and be ready to rock. I mean, you know, if we're not hearing anything and we're not ready to be busting it, it's like we can just kind of chill out, make some coffee, relax a little bit. But I think just getting up, kind of getting the blood flowing, maybe get a quick 10 as far as push-ups in, you know, get warmed up and get everything torn down. That way, as soon as one cracks off, we're ready to run.
Yeah.
That's kind of what Ben and I had talked with.
As what long do as we know, cool like shooting light, roughly?
We were getting up at 5:30, and I'd say if we start with that, we'll be good.
Yeah.
Be ready.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure when sunrise is.
The beauty of elk hunting, though, and I learned this from Cody, and I feel like I could probably, I mean, I feel like we could all sometimes use this as far as deer hunting, too, or any type of hunting. It's like, no agenda. We're just going. Like, we'll get up when we get up. I mean, we'll shoot for getting up early and, you know, but no, like, rush. It's not like we're going to say, hey, it's not like I'm going to be like, hey, 5:30, and everybody's packed up by 5:37. Like, you know,
It's not like hunting ducks, then.
No, it's not. That's not for sure.
And we don't have to drive anywhere. We're here already.
Yep, we're literally in a position to make a move right off the bat, which I'm just so stoked for. Ben, any questions, comments, concerns?
No, I mean, I think, well, one thing is, like, I've got a new pack, and I haven't used it before, so I'm constantly trying to mess with the straps and stuff. And I mean, I assume in the next couple of days I'll be able to get it to the point where it's making me not a lot of pain.
Yeah.
It's getting better, though. I mean,
I'm in the same boat, you know, trying to get... It's the fine adjustments. Once you throw, you know, 20 pounds hiking around, you don't feel it anyways. You know, you can throw that in a backpack.
Right.
Once you get above 30 and you're starting to get weight and, you know, you're going 1,000%, not having those little adjustments right beforehand makes a big difference. I can feel it. I feel it pretty good in my lower back right now. So taking the time and, you know,
testing your gear,
yeah,
right?
I mean, don't buy it a week before season and throw 40 pounds in it and
right.
Jump on the Stairmaster.
Yeah. I mean, with that being said too, I mean, I went through the same, like I'm at a position now where my pack feels great. I mean, I can tell that I feel so much better than you guys just as far as comfort, but it did take me 2 or 3 days. Yeah. I mean,
I think that's the important part is like every time you take a break, like constantly tweak something if you think it's going to make a difference. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've fit other packs before and that's the only way I've known to do it, really.
I think you can definitely do research, call customer service from the company that you bought from. But at the same time, I just think that like you said, I mean, trial and error, practice, man. It's like I said, one of the biggest
muscle
things.
Muscle memory too, probably. Yeah. I mean, I assume.
One of the biggest things that I said is like different about this is that, you know, it can be intimidating, dude. Like, if you're out here by yourself, would you have walked all the way up here? I wouldn't have. You know what I mean? Like, no way. So it's like, I think testing your gear, trying it even if it's in the dang backyard, man. Throw your tent up, sleep on your sleeping pad, make sure you got a gauge of how warm you are in your sleeping bag, stuff like that can like make you have the confidence to go out here and do this. And then having a group of guys, man, like honestly having you guys here is super fun. And it's, I mean, I had such a great time with Wes, Cody, Ted, and Zach. Like it changed my life and I can't wait to like help introduce you guys into it. I mean, for as like still naive as I am, like, you know, I'm just excited to like get more people out here and doing it. And I hope that by listening to our excitement for those of you at home, like just please trust it and try it, man. It is amazing. Yeah. It's seriously this the coolest
I
thing.
Mean, this is already the coolest thing I've ever done. Mm-hmm. And when all we did was just hike up a mountain.
Yeah. Like, you haven't even heard of bugle.
Really never even seen an elk in the wild. So. Yeah.
So with that being said, we'll close her out for the night. And we're going to see some elk in the wild tomorrow. That's the goal. We're in a good spot.
I got one more.
Yeah, yeah.
I got a closer.
All right.
I would say, so for me, I kind of dove headfirst into this 6-7 months ago and fully committed by myself. I didn't know anybody out here that would hunt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got a lot of waterfowl buddies, a lot of deer and turkey buddies, but nobody that was going to come out and hunt with me. So I just kind of committed to doing it myself, and I learned a lot. And then through that commitment, you know, I met Zach. Now I met Ben, and, you know, I've got a couple buddies that I can now go with, but if I wouldn't have tried and to do it on my own and to learn it on my own, I would have never even, you know, met these guys, and I wouldn't be out here right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think just getting out there and getting started mm-hmm. is the hardest part, but if you don't do that, it'll always be trying to figure out when the right time is, and there's mm-hmm. no better time, and it's so cliche, there's no better time to do it than right now.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause if every year you push it off, every year you don't hunt elk, is one less year in your life that you're going to be able to do it.
Yeah. And
we're only on our 20s so long.
Yeah. Yeah.
These backs aren't going to last forever.
Well, and the other thing is, to me too, it's like, then you're just 1 year shy of more mistakes. And it sounds like backwards, but like, you have to come out here and fail. Like, you have to come out here and fail.
Oh, you have to lose.
You're not just going to come out here and get one. Like, you have to have a couple of learning curve years where, like, you're busting your butt to figure this out. And, like, I mean, that's where we're at right now. So it's mm-hmm. the trial and error part. And one other thing, too, that, like, I think is cool. Like, real quick story. I guess here we go. I was about to close it, but.
I ruined that.
Yeah. So quick story of how Colin and I met. And I think this is also, like, and the reason I'm mentioning this is because I feel like we get a lot of, like questions or comments like, man, I wish I had hunting buddies that like you guys. And so to put it into perspective of how I've done it my whole life, this is how I feel like we've all done it, you know, just knowing you guys as well. It's like, all right, so here's the perspective. So here's my little story of not having any hunting buddies in a new area. So I spend a lot of time in Colorado because my girlfriend lives here, and I hang out with her and my aunt and uncle who also live out here, and like all their friends. And I never like had a hunting buddy, you know, like I had never had like a, or not, I never had a lot of hunting buddies. And here, so it was like, I'm gonna go. So Whitney's, my girlfriend's brother, and I, and Whitney actually started going to places. Like, we went to a backcountry hunter angler like get together, go there, meet Colin, meet that, you moving your dang feet again.
Yeah.
So like, meet Colin, met like that night, we met like had a whole group of guys out there that we met. And I think just go in and put yourself out there in those situations. Strike up a conversation. Go to your local bow shop and talk about, just find somebody that, like, you know, also is interested in the same stuff. Go to places that are high odds of meeting other like-minded individuals, and you will find hunting buddies quick. I mean, I told Ben on the way here, heck, I might even told you, Colin, like, we're probably going to be friends for a long time. So deal with it, you know, I can just, you know, it's just
it
like,
happens.
Right. So it's like, just like putting yourself out there and like, you know, I mean, I was like, you know, I go to that thing and I'm like nervous, like, man, hopefully like, you know, somebody wants to talk about hunting, even though that's what everybody's there for. It's like, you know, it's like hard to like kind of break out of your comfort zone and like go talk to somebody, but like, just do it. And like, then next thing you know, you got a friend for life. Cody said something out here too that really plays into that. He's like, man, people complain about hunting pressure and stuff. He's like, that could be your best friend. Go talk to him. He's like, if you bump into somebody, that could be your next best friend, like, for the rest of your life.
Yes.
Go talk to him. It's just like, we're out here doing the same thing. We're probably friends.
Yeah.
We probably should be friends.
You know what was kind of cool about that is somehow we dove down a rabbit hole of bow hunting prairie dogs, which was like my hobby of the summer, which is basically why me and Zach decided to link up and, you know, we go shoot some prairie dogs one day and now we're here at 10,400 feet.
Yep.
So if you can introduce, you know, you might have two hunters, but that doesn't mean they do the same things. You know, I'm a big waterfowl guy and just recently getting into turkey hunting. So if somebody can show me a lot of stuff about hunting turkeys and I can take them to hunt geese, you know, you're exchanging knowledge and you're learning from each other and you're still doing the things you love. You're just getting a little bit of help. And,
yeah.
You know, that's, there's nothing wrong with that. It's a great thing.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Well, I thought that was a pretty cool ending. That's a pretty cool, like, wrap up there. That's why we're all out here. And on the other hand, you could just be like Ben and I, who, like, have been, like, we knew each other before we can even remember. Like, we've been hunting together for so long. It's old news, so. It's, you know, trip with old friends, new friends. It's going to be good. I'm looking forward to waking up in the morning here and screaming, bowl, son. Oh, it's going to be good. So we're going to wrap it up. We're going to kind of clean up our camp here, go to sleep, and we're going to be after them first thing in the morning. We're getting up at 5 o'clock, 5:30. We'll give a 5:30 and hopefully be chasing a bull.
Heck yeah, man.
Thanks for listening, guys. We'll catch you on the next one.
Stay tuned.